2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Tacos Fast 40, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. This week we are headed to Kansas for the KC Masterpiece 400. But first, let me talk about last week. Last week was just fantastic, as there were many things that just fell in our favor, and we were able to capitalize on it and win some big money. We had the solo $10 Piston winner, Max Williams, over there on DraftKings, taking home $75,000 to himself. And he was a much smarter man than me, winning all by himself, because I took home the $5 FanDuel Intimidator contest, the one that had tons of overlay last week, but I shared with a few people, only got to take home $5,500. And even that I had to share with a fellow Army member, and it was a very good day. The top 50 was just littered in that contest, just DFS Army helmets, because we were crushing it over there on FanDuel. A bit of a story about what happened there last week, but first, let me tell you that you can get a 10% lifetime discount by using promo code TACO if you sign up at DFSArmy.com. We have got content out now for tomorrow's race, the Research Station, the Domination Station Lineup Optimizer, the projections are up for DraftKings and for FanDuel. I'll be trying to go over FanDuel a little bit more in depth this week, since it's a relatively new product, only a few weeks in, but we've had some initial success with it, done very well. A lot of people over there are still playing it wrong, so I'll try to make sure you guys know how the FanDuel is going to work out this week. And yeah, our MLB content's looking really good. Golf content's been awesome. And you can come check us out, DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO for a lifetime 10% off. So looking back at last week, interesting story with FanDuel. NASCAR decides to move their starting time up a few minutes, and DraftKings complies, moves their starting time up 10 minutes. FanDuel, kind of asleep at the wheel here, they leave it locked at 2 p.m., and while the race didn't get to start and allow us to take advantage of it that way, we were able to see DraftKings ownership, and well, we were on it over here at the Army. We had ownership up from DraftKings within 30 to 40 seconds after lock, and we were able to use that information and parlay it directly into FanDuel. With FanDuel, we know that since everybody's scores are very, very close, ownership is extremely important. And while Harvick ended up being the chalk, the must-needed chalk, outside of him, really, you wanted to take a contrarian route, and our top projected play for FanDuel was already Brad Keselowski, but once we saw him at 11% over on DraftKings, just severely underowned, huge, awesome leverage play for us, and he was able to get out there early and lead 100 laps at pretty low ownership. I think he came in at about 16% owned on FanDuel, and the FanDuel scoring system is much, much more appropriately set up for a guy starting in the front to do extremely well. We see pretty much an inverse correlation with DraftKings as far as that's concerned. The guys starting up front just score well on FanDuel in general, on most tracks. Hell, almost every single track. If Talladega has more fantasy points scored in the front 15 starting positions, then every single track is going to be like that for sure. And that's how it is over there on FanDuel. But we were able to see those ownerships early. Thank you very much, DraftKings. And the overlay was just massive last week. They have scaled back on their contests quite a bit, but they only had about 18,000 out of 25,000 seats filled for their $5 Intimidator contest. And once we realized that that overlay was going to be real, we just started hammering that contest, because you were going to get more money. There's more money being paid out in the prize pool than there was even in the entry fees. So it was a big winner for everybody. You got to pass like 4,000 or 5,000 people with empty lineups that weren't even in the contest just from the get-go. Really fun week last week. Like I said, the contests on FanDuel are not nearly as big anymore, and some of them are almost filling up already, so you've got to get in there kind of early. The race will be tomorrow night at 8 p.m., so it's a very late night race, but I know that we had this, both the practices got consolidated into one mega practice today, but the temperatures at the track should be very similar to what we see during the race. I know towards the end of the race, things will definitely cool down a bit, but I was looking and they practice at 80 degree weather, and tomorrow night from 8 to 10, it'll be around 80 degrees there as well, as it is pretty hot in Kansas. Looking at some Kansas stats right here, the last few years we've had some interesting things go down. Half of the time, this is a chase race, and this is a pretty important chase race when we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of things. But the spring race, or this race right here, is usually a lot calmer. There's a little bit less in stake. People play it a little bit safer here, on general, but still anything can happen. As far as DNFs go on this track, drivers finish 92.6% of their laps, and that's a bit under average. It ranks fifth in percentage of race ran under caution, 17.2%, and only ranks 16th in average green flag run, 23 laps. So we do find some cautions here, a bit more than you would see at your other 1.5 mile ovals. And this track, when you're looking at fantasy points and how they're spread out, there's one trend that we see in particular, and that is the pole sitter is the way to go. They average exactly 100 lead laps and 42.1 fast laps off of the pole. That ranks number one in all of NASCAR. First starting position is absolutely where you would like to be, and we have no better than Kevin Harvick this week sitting on the pole, and there is such a case to be made for him. If you look at the DraftKings positional scoring summary and just look at how pole sitters have fared, they've finished every single lap in the last 10 races. Average running position of 5.9, average finish of 5.8. If you're looking at any other position, the average finishes, none of them are better than 10th. The pole sitter averages a 5.8 finish. Like I said earlier, 100 lead laps, 42 fast laps. They hit 70 fantasy points 70% of the time, 100 fantasy points 40% of the time. An average driver rating of 126, and of course the 0% DNF rate, as no pole sitter has missed a single lap, or has not finished on the lead lap here. When breaking it down a little further, we see that driver starting first through fifth, they've been in the top six fantasy points on DraftKings, or the optimal lineup, 20 times, as where a lot of the other starting positions, like 6 through 10, 11 through 15th, they have 7 and 8. Really, the second most that we see is a 16th through 20th starting position, which looks just sort of comparable to the positions around it when it comes to average fantasy points. But we do see a larger percentage of them in the optimal lineups here, as we've had 10 drivers in the optimal lineups from the 16th through 20th starting position. And guys starting in the back, 30th or worse, only twice have we seen them in the optimal lineup. Once last year, when Ryan Blaney started dead last in this race. Other than that, the scrubs here do absolutely horribly, averaging under 20 fantasy points, anyone starting 31st or worse. As with all the other starting slots, they average at least 23 fantasy points, most of them over 25, looking at 30 fantasy points. And of course, first through fifth, 42 fantasy points, mainly because the pole sitter averaging 80 fantasy points. It's still just so disgusting to look at. Here in Darlington, just the pole sitters are just what you want. Looking at guys starting on the outside row, they average 28 fantasy points. They have a much rougher go at it. None of them have ever hit 70 fantasy points starting on the outside line. So just something to look at there. And if we go over to FanDuel scoring, still a lot of the same. The pole sitter averages 73 fantasy points. And second, third, fourth, fifth, all average anywhere between 50 and 58 fantasy points. Not a huge spread there, but breaking it down a little further, first through fifth starting position average 58 fantasy points, sixth through tenths averaging 53.7. 11th through 15th, 51.3. It's just a sliding scale down. The higher up you start, the more fantasy points you score on average. No other starting slot between or besides first through fifth has had more than nine guys in the optimal five lineup, as where the first to fifth starting spot has 19 of the guys in the optimal lineups throughout the last 10 races. Something else that we do see in this track is the DNF percentages. They correlate very significantly to starting position as well. Although it seems like first place through 20th place are all right around the same sort of mark. You know, first through 10th, right around 13% DNF rate. 11th through 20th, around 17% DNF rate. And then as you look further, 21st through 30th, 26% DNF rate. 31st through 35th, 32% DNF rate. And then 36th through 40th, 53% DNF rate. And those guys starting in the very, very back, I know this week is going to be very different with some key guys qualifying in the back there, but that's more of your 31 through 35 range this week. Outside of that, you really don't want to use any of these scrubs, and especially this week with guys like Greg Alding starting in the low 20s, Corey LaJoy as well, just some obvious do not plays, but I think everyone's going to realize that. But the separation in fantasy scoring is still just very close here. We can see that 82% of the time, drivers starting 1st through 5th hit 50 fantasy points on FanDuel, but drivers starting 6th through 10th and 11th through 15th, 72% of the time they hit 50%. It's really just the high upside marks here. We see 60% of the time 1st through 5th hit 60 fantasy points, where 40% of the time 6th through 10th starting spot hits that mark, and 32% of the time for 11th through 15th, and so on, just way down the scale there. That's because really the only people scoring these big points are the ones leading hella laps. And if we go to the historical performances tab, we can see that several times we've had guys leading a bunch of laps. If we look here, in 10 races, we've had 9 guys lead over 100 laps, and almost all of those guys scored over 40 laps or 40 fast laps as well, and that all just has to be with them running out in front. The guy running out in front is going to usually collect both the lead and the fast laps if they're running out in that clean air, and once they check out, they're not going to be caught. I've been watching a lot of restarts from the last few years, and usually the driver who wins off of pit road and gets that starting lane of choice, they could pick the outside or the lower groove, and it won't really matter. They could take the inside or outside, and they're going to shoot off and just be gone in the sunset pretty much every single time. And they really won't be caught until there's a caution or a stage ending, because that's how this track kind of works itself out here. Looking at all the top fantasy scores from DraftKings, and almost all of these guys, you know, all the super high scoring dudes are either off of the pole or in the top three or four. We've seen in two instances, Harvick last year, or 2 years ago, starting back in 26, and Blaney starting dead last year. These guys put up a bunch of fantasy points, and I guess Casey Kane back in 2013 starting 27th. But for the most part, it looks like the top 10 top 10 starting positions are where the high end fantasy points, as were if you look to the guys starting just down lower. They can score a lot, but they don't have the ceiling that they would at a track like a plate race, of course. This is going to be a matter of picking a guy that will stay on the lead lap, who won't get lapped after a while, or go down a lap or two. And not as bad as at some of these shorter tracks where guys get lapped very quickly, like last week at Dover. But yeah, if there are some long green flag runs and the guys back in the 20s and 30s start to get lapped, that's going to be bad news for him. I looked last year at this race, they had a competition caution at lap 30, and I believe they're going to have the same tomorrow night. And once it hit lap 30 there, they had gotten all the way down to the 30th place car in Landon Castle and lapped him. He was the lucky dog. So it kind of gives you an idea of who's going to be lapped very quickly. And I can definitely say that outside of the guys who are really good drivers who qualified in the back, all those guys in the back, your LaJoys and Castles of the world, are just going to be a lap down sooner than later in this race. And when you get to the guys like Allmendinger and I guess not Buescher because he qualified so high, but usually like a Buescher type or a Ty Dillon, you've really got to be considerate of how easy it is for them to go a lap down. Now, that's not going to kill you on FanDuel, even though they do score total laps, but you know the difference between 267 and 266 laps isn't huge. It's really just about not crashing early. If you crash early, your FanDuel lineup is just toast. So, you know, looking at this DNF percentage, overall about a 25% DNF percentage, but it's really heavily weighted towards the scrubs. Guys starting in the top 20, the good drivers will have a true 15% DNF rate about. So that could happen to any driver. If you have the balls to fade Harvick on FanDuel and something happens to him, then you are going to be a rich person. That's just how it's going to be this week. I guess the same could be said for Truex because they're going to kind of be double chalk over there. But that's the kind of thing that will win you a GPP this week, especially on FanDuel with the scores being so even, is finding the right chalk to fade or picking some of the contrarian GPP dominators to go after. And as I go through the field here, I kind of have it separated in between like different groupings of people because it's really easy to divide people up like that this week. Just real quick, wanted to go over some notes I had from last year at this race. So for the fall race, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be the same at this race here, stages will be set up 80 laps, 80 laps, and 107 laps with a 57 to 60 fuel lap window. So we won't see a ton of guys staying out super late. I guess I should tell you that the grip level here at this track is a 4 out of 5, which is really good. There's a lot of grip, and the drivers say that you know, it's a very easy track to drive because you can drive at whichever groove you want. It's a multi-groove racetrack. You can kind of pick your lane you want to find speed at or move around and try to find some speed. But once you lose that grip, you're in a lot of trouble. You can get into an accident here just by getting out of the grip and getting a little loose. And as we go further into a night race, the cars will start out tighter and naturally loosen up as we go throughout the night. And that's kind of a good thing for, especially for certain drivers, but it can cause for some random crashes here. We're not going to see a complete green flag run like we have at some other tracks. There's going to be at least a few people spinning out or finding themselves in some sort of trouble. They just don't usually take out a ton of people with them. They did this last race here in the fall, but I'll go over that real quickly here. So the last fall race, the weather was overcast during the practices, a little bit like now or at this race here, but it wasn't a complete difference in temperature between practice and the race. But the practices still proved to be very telling, and that's something that I've got going on for this week, is that I was able to catch the where everyone was at during practice. Since they did that one mega practice, I was able to capture the field where they were before everyone started switching into qualifying trim from their race trim and putting up laps that way. So if you look on the research station, the race trim section will show you who's the fastest before they switched over to the qualifying trim. That's going to be important this week. But even last year, if you consider the qualifying trim, I know they had two different practices, but the final practice was actually pretty good at telling who was going to be pretty fast at this track. This last race was the chase race, and a couple of drivers had already won and weren't too worried about it. Truex had won, Keselowski had already won, and Kyle Busch, Jimmy Johnson, and Kenseth came in needing a win. So Truex came out here with the pole and just... He took the pole over Harvick and just checked out completely, flew out to a giant lead. Then comes the competition caution. Like I said, they got up to lapping Castle. And then after that, he once again checked out on the restart over Kyle Busch, but he got served a penalty and had to go to the back. So the race got a bit mixed up there. I'm sure that Truex would have dominated even more if he hadn't got that penalty, but it wouldn't matter in the end, as Truex would eventually come back and win here. But the race did kind of take an unfortunate turn. You had Kyle Larson blow his engine in the middle of the race after doing fairly decently and not really dominating or leading laps anything. But it was yet another unfortunate finish for Larson, who's had some bad luck here. And then you had Keselowski got the lead after a caution, but unfortunately he spun his tires pretty hard on the restart. And that was one of the only times I'd seen anyone not instantly get the lead off the restart. It allowed for Blaney to kind of check out and grab some lead laps there for a minute. Literally like 1 minute though, because Kyle Busch started in seventh with fresh tires. And, you know, these weren't, they weren't just like a couple of laps of difference. There were pretty significant differences in their tires. Blaney and Keselowski were trying, and a few other guys were trying out a pit strategy where they didn't pit, something that we could see this week, but it didn't work out for them. In two laps, Kyle Busch had passed them all and took the lead. And that was before Larson's engine had blown. Even then, Kyle Busch ended up leading for a little while. Then there was some pit strategy stuff going on towards the end of stage two. Some guys stayed out to get some stage points. Hamlin ended up winning that stage. But ultimately, it didn't matter in the end. Harvick dominated the third stage, even though they had to restart repeatedly. And then eventually, Eric Jones was in third, and he just crashed like the entire field. Took out like anywhere from 7 to 10 guys. It was pretty nasty. And then ultimately, in the end, Truex did make a pass on Kyle Busch for the lead right before Allmendinger crashed. Then after that restart, Truex just checked out very easily and went on for the win. Looking back at the spring race here, Blaney was on the pole, so quite the opposite of his fall race. And it was just like this week where a bunch of guys failed tech. You had Bowyer failed tech like this week. Jimmy Johnson, Eric Jones, Casey Kane, David Reagan, Dale Jr., McDowell, Castle. So a lot of free plays down there just like this week. And the practice was completely off because they were, you know, a completely different conditions to that night race. So it was really hard to use that practice last year. And, you know, Blaney took a lot of stage one, but no one ended up leading for more than 43 laps at a time. We saw a lot of small cautions and a lot of lead changes. So it's definitely something that can happen here. It's just usually when you get a really good, really fast car out there, they can lead just for a while, a good while. But remember that average green flag run of only 23. Not as much as we see at those other 1.5s for sure, where we can have a green flag run of like an entire stage. So I'll just give you a quick idea of what Kansas is like. It really is a similar 1.5 mile track to, say, Kentucky or Iowa. But they each have their own intricacies and things that make themselves unique. So I guess enough about the track. Let's dive right into these drivers. The analysis is going to be pretty easy this week, as the elite drivers are just super elite this week, and you want to use them like no matter what. Particularly three of them, perhaps the three most expensive on the board on both sides, and we will definitely go talk about them here. And those three that I'm going to talk about, might as well talk about them all at a time, because they all have their own merits here. Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex Jr. How good are they compared to the field? Well, they are the only ones in triple digits when it comes to driver rating at 1.5 mile tracks, and Kevin Harvick and Truex Jr. stick out significantly in that stat. Kyle Busch coming in at 107 driver rating at 1.5, which is a very respectable number, and he does very well here. Six straight top 10 finishes for him, but Kevin Harvick, 123. Martin Truex Jr., 122.8. They are both pretty similar in their skill set. Harvick with the average running position of 5.7, Truex 6.5. We know from last year that Truex just smashed through these 1.5 mile tracks. And we know that this year, Kevin Harvick is just a machine. Definitely the best car in NASCAR. But Kyle Busch has definitely not been a slouch lately, finishing top three in pretty much every single race, always right there, always leading some laps. And he had really good long run speeds in practice as well. So Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, your three favorite to lead laps and dominate. And I'm just saying that you can play all three on FanDuel together, and you're going to have the chalkiest lineup ever. I just guarantee it. Because if you look at these guys, Harvick's 4.333 repeating forever to 1. Kyle Busch is 5-1, and Truex is 5-1. The next closest after that is Larson at 9-1, and then after that, Keselowski at 13-1. The odds are very clear that there are three favorites to this race, and they are starting 1st, 3rd, and 7th. They all get to be on the inside line, or hell, the outside line, whichever Harvick chooses, which is a good thing for all of them. I would expect Kyle Busch to initially pass Blaney, even though Blaney has been fantastic here. This is probably his best track. Almost wanted to include Blaney in this like big four, but really got to call him the big three here because they're just so insanely good overall at the 1.5 mile tracks. But Harvick, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., you really can't go wrong with any of them, but you obviously have to look to Kevin Harvick first and foremost. Since this car's generation, he's won this thing three times with three runner-up finishes. Last year at this race, he finished third, and the fall race, he finished eighth, which is one of his worst performances here. I know, it's killer. Averages 51.3 lead laps, 33 fast laps, 122.3 driver rating at Kansas, which is by far the best of anyone in this field, even over Martin Truex Jr., who won both of these races last year. Kevin Harvick is a beast, and he's going to continue being a beast at this track right here. Holy crap, he is so lock and load this week. I know he costs 13.5 on FanDuel, but that is perfectly okay because he's going to get so many lead laps. Just so many. The data just points so much in his direction. There's just a giant circle around him on DraftKings and FanDuel that just say, hey, over here, play me. Play this number four. But like I said earlier, if you have the balls to fade him, and he's going to be owned like 60% on both sides, I would imagine, if people are relatively smart. And I'm going to be more on like the 80% side, like going crazy amounts of Harvick here just because it's such an obvious play. If you have the balls to fade him and anything happens to him, congratulations on all of your cash. But I really don't see a way that Blaney beats Harvick off of the initial start here. Just that has not happened before. And then Kyle Busch right there in third, he would be the first guy in line to pass Harvick, but I really don't see that happening until at least the competition caution. And the case against Harvick is that competition caution. Will we have a few guys stay out? And will there be enough guys that stay out to create a bit of a buffer in front of guys like Harvick and Busch and Truex to keep them from getting around? Like we saw at that last race, several cars tried doing that, and Kyle Busch, it took him a lap and a half to pass them all. I know the tire wear off in this track is slow, but once it does wear off after a while, it's gone. It just takes about 10 laps or so to start falling off. It's not like at certain tracks where the tires fall off like instantly. This was repaved fairly recently, back in 2012. So the surface isn't that rough. It's not like we would see at, you know, Dover, Kentucky, or another track that's known for being on the rougher side. So those are the big three. None of them are Chevys because, you know, a lot of these Chevys are struggling quite a bit here, especially during qualification, as the only one that made the final round was Chris Buescher, oddly enough. But yeah, all these guys up front in the top 10, they're all Fords and Toyotas. Ford's been amazing this year, and at the 1.5s, you really can't count out Toyota. That's their stomping grounds. So moving on from the big three here, Ryan Blaney. I'll talk about what this group here is. This would be your secondary group of possible dominators. Your GPP plays, guys that you're using to get off of the big three here, not guys you would take in cash by any means. That'd be the next group you talk about, the place differential guys, but this group right here is a very good chance of being alternative dominators, just like Keselowski last week, and heck, he's in this group this week. We're going to start off with all three members of Penske, Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano, and Brad Keselowski. And we're going to throw in Cheatin' Denny Hamlin in there as well. He's going to be quite the dark horse, as no one's really going to think about him here. And he's been kind of flying under the radar as well. Blaney makes the most sense. I know he's the most expensive of the three Penske drivers on FanDuel, which seems weird. He's a lot cheaper on DraftKings. But when you think about his history here, it does make sense. And FanDuel obviously uses track history in their algorithm. As Blaney finished third and fourth here last year and led laps in both of them. Also fifth place finish in 2016, seventh place finish in 2015. Yeah, he's not bad here. 8,800 on DraftKings, 11,500 on FanDuel. Huge difference there. I would play him on FanDuel for sure, starting second, and I would probably get off of him on DraftKings if you were doing cross-site hedging. That just seems like the move here all the way. He's going to be very popular on DraftKings as he's a big salary saver, and on FanDuel, I'd imagine you'd get the lower ownership, but he could be the Keselowski of this week over there on FanDuel for sure. I don't see his ownership getting that high. I think people would take Logano and Keselowski for cheaper. It just depends on how it works out. Maybe if Blaney falls in as the last guy, a lot of people do know that he's very good here, and they might play him. But, you know, with everyone playing Kevin Harvick, people are quite hesitant to play both Blaney and Harvick starting 1 and 2. But I would definitely do that on FanDuel for sure. And looking at the rest of Penske here, I like these guys on FanDuel a lot. Joey Logano starting 9th. He's an extremely safe play. He's had some crashes here the last couple of years, but when he's not crashing, he's had one bad finish that hasn't involved a crash, and that was his last race here in the fall, and I do think he was actually involved in that late accident, or at least dinged up a little bit. He had a 21st place finish, but scratched that off in his two crashes from 2017 and 2016, and nothing but top five finishes from him. A win in 2014 and a win in 2015. Of course, those both came in the fall races. He has crashed in both of the spring races so far, and if you remember last week, Kyle Busch had sort of the same thing. Then he ended up having a drive shaft fail on him. Now, there's no actual science behind this at all, the whole spring and fall race thing. That is just complete randomness that looks like a pattern, but it is really not. So fear not with Logano. I would definitely play him as an alternate dominator type player here. But I also like on FanDuel, his laps finish stats are the best of any stud. You'd figure Harvick would be the best in that regard, and he is when it comes to percentage of lead lap finishes. But Logano has finished 90% of, or 97% of his laps. 87% of the time he's within two laps of the lead, or of the lead lap when he finishes. Those are the best numbers of any of the studs. He's been really good at keeping his car clean, especially this year. He's been posted in the top 10 constantly. Doesn't have the best practice times, for sure. But that's never really stopped him before in the past. And he is certainly a guy that's known not to put on qualifying trim. And we can see that. He came in 25th fast in practice officially, but before they all got into race trim, he was 6th on the board. So just a little sneaky little thought there with Logano. I kind of really like him a lot this week. And then Keselowski, who was 9th fastest in practice and ultimately ended up 11th. Not quite as fast as Logano outside of that, aside of him getting into qualifying trim there. The long run speeds, Blaney and Logano were both fastest. Blaney was 5th in 10 and 15 lap speeds. Logano was 7th in both of those. Keselowski 11th and 18th. A little bit slower on the longer runs there. But starting 5th, he could definitely get his nose up front and be an alternative dominator like last week. I don't think it's going to happen personally. His history here isn't quite as good as Logano's by any means, or even Blaney for that matter. He is the runner-up in this race last year. Other than that, he has a hard time cracking the top 10 for whatever reason, with the same number of crashes as Logano, even less. So not huge on him for the track history, and Keselowski He said himself earlier in the season that his 1.5 mile package just isn't there right now compared to his short track package, which he is very confident in. And that's starting to become a little while ago. I'm sure that he has worked on it. I'm just not as huge on him as I was last week, for sure. And then Denny Hamlin, 9,500 on FanDuel, 11.3 on FanDuel, starting 6th. He's going to be, under the radar play for sure. Has done horribly, just absolutely horribly on these spring races. 23rd, 37th, 41st, 18th, 23rd. But that could definitely get shaken to the wayside. I mean, I do like fading Hamlin. He's got 23-1 odds right now, which are horrible. Logano's right there as well. Just really off-putting that the odds makers would put these guys so high on this list. But I guess it's because they're sure that one of the Kyles or Martin or Kevin Harvick here is going to win this race. But really surprising numbers to see Logano and Hamlin. I've never seen them that high before in the odds books. But Hamlin could certainly lead some laps. I'm worried that his average fast laps at Kansas, 1.3. Average lead laps at Kansas, 0.7. He just hasn't done it before. This isn't really a track where he shines through. And even on 1.5 mile tracks, nowhere as good as Kyle Busch is, where he's better on the shorter track, sort of like Kyle Busch is, just not to the same extent. And then one more alternative dominator, but this will really start the place differential section here. Kyle Larson was just crazy fast in practice. He was third overall in race trim and then ended up second overall in qualifying trim. Didn't end up qualifying high at all, though. He qualified 22nd, so that's quite unfortunate for him. And the only reason was because he took a spin, had himself a little accident during the second round of qualifying. So he had already made it in the top 24. And they even let him go back out there to get his run in again and ended up qualifying 22nd. I don't believe he'll have to go to a backup car, but I will let you guys know if that is the case tomorrow. There were just some minor dents and dings that they should be able to buff out pretty easily for tomorrow. So he gets a nice starting position of 22nd. But he was fastest in the 10-lap speeds, second only to Kyle Busch in the 15-lap speeds. Just super fast overall, has a really fast car. He has not had success here in the past. He was 6th in the spring race last year, crashed in the chase race, and the three races before that spring race were also all sub-30 finishes, just not very good for him. But he does have the runner-up finish here in 2014. Now, in theory, this could definitely be a track where we see Kyle Larson doing very well. He's fast in practice, and it is a multi-groove racetrack, so he can feel free to ride the outside lane to his liking, or just move all around the racetrack, which is what he is so good at doing. I just worry about Chevy's overall speed here. Maybe it was just qualifying, but man, were Chevy's really, really bad during qualifying. A lot of these guys are in this little place differential section because they qualified so poorly. You've got Chase Elliott starting back in 17th. He's had some success here. Last year in this race, he survived that crash and finished 4th. Starting 17th is enough to intrigue me a little bit on him. He's another one of those guys that hit 23-1 overall in the odds. Not great numbers for him, and he's just been really, really quiet lately. He's had some sneaky top 10s, but he's led all of 8 laps this year, and some of those laps are at the Daytona 500, I do believe. So it's just been really bad for Elliott and all of Hendricks so far this year. Really, the young guys, Bowman and Byron, have almost outperformed him. And the same goes for Jimmy Johnson here. He starts back in 23rd, which is really nice for him, makes him a nice little place differential play, but $9,300, you're going to have to seriously consider fading someone like Bowyer that I'm about to talk about here, and I don't know if you want to do that by any means, really. But you will have to carve out some room for Jimmy Johnson starting 23rd. Just, you don't have to make a crazy huge play on him. He just hasn't been all that great this season. He's definitely someone that you could see getting into trouble, but could also just hang on for a top 5 and be perfectly fine. Be a nice pivot off of Bowyer if he were to crash or something. And let's talk about Bowyer real quick. He has the potential to be the highest owned driver on both sites. Outside of perhaps Harvick. Yeah, Harvick will definitely be the highest owned, but Boyer's going to be right up there. He's been phenomenal this season, and he didn't get to make a qualifying run yet again. I got to start all the way back in 33rd. So that's going to be just excellent for him. He's going to fly back up the field. This is his home track in Iowa, and he has a fast car. He just couldn't get through tech to even get a qualifying lap out there. Got a real fast car, fourth in 10-lap speeds, 15-lap speeds, fifth overall in practice, just really nice car. All of Stuart Haas is looking amazing. I would play every single Stuart Haas car this week, especially on FanDuel, since some of them qualified higher up. I'm about to talk about them here shortly, too. But Bowyer ranks out as our top projected play overall. Just makes way too much sense starting back in 33rd. You just have to manage how much of him you have as the chalk. I'd play less of him on FanDuel, obviously. DraftKings, he's just too obvious of like a... He's like a free space in cash and just a really high upside GPP play as well. I would have been on Bowyer if he would have qualified like 7th. So 33rd, that's just too easy. So, back to the Stuart Haas Racing guys. We've got a couple in this next section here, which are guys that unfortunately qualified too high. They're in, all in the mid-range, about $8,000 or so. We'll start off with Eric Almirola, who's got a hot rod. Let's just get that out of the way real quick. Before guys got into qualifying trim, he was first overall on the board, put up some lightning, super fast speeds, and he even came in third behind Larson and Kyle Busch in the 10 and 15 lap averages. Dude, he said it was fast coming off of the truck. Didn't make many changes to it. He's just sitting on a really fast car right now. And he's had that setup this year a couple of times. And the thing is, he hasn't led a lap this year, and he doesn't really even have many fast laps this year. In a couple of races, he's collected a few fast laps, but not like an amount that would be all that great. He's definitely a FanDuel play. This is the first guy I'll consider almost fully a FanDuel play. He's starting fourth. He wasn't even that highly owned last week when he was starting dead last, so I can't imagine he's going to be much higher owned this week starting in fourth. You've got to imagine a lot of the guys playing FanDuel still or come in from DraftKings, and they know that there's place differential involved, so they think, oh, I can't play Almirola starting in fourth. But I would say if you're playing both sites equally, just play all of your Almirola exposure over on FanDuel, because he can go backwards, and place differential does matter a lot more on DraftKings. But remember, the top five starting positions, that's the best place to be on FanDuel. So you want to get your Eric Almirola over there on that site. And then Kurt Busch, more of the same there. He's another guy that's super consistent with finishing in the lead lap and or finishing most of his laps, 97% of his laps finished. That's right on board with Joey Logano. And just like Joey Logano, he's got a sneaky good history here. Second in this race last year, a third place finish in 2016, a couple of runner-up finishes back in 2013, some top 10s along the way, a few crashes along the way. That's what everybody's history looks like here a little bit. Anyone can crash. It really does make the case for some of those fades up top if you want to think about it that way. But Kurt Busch starting 8th, that's a little high for DraftKings. Again, this is going to be a FanDuel play, especially with him being very overpriced over there. $10,600, that's more expensive than Jimmy Johnson, more expensive than Clint Bowyer. I expect his ownership to be low, so I'm going to use a decent amount of him, maybe about 15 to 20% over there on FanDuel, and try to get some good leverage there and hedge from me fading him over on DraftKings. And Eric Jones, he's actually been really sneaky good here. Here's the thing about Eric Jones. Fifth in practice, ultimately ended up fourth, but faster car, 15 lap speeds, kind of struggling, so I don't really like that. He has a horrible track history here. Back when Kyle Busch was injured, he finished dead last. I think he crashed here. The dude loves to crash. He only finishes 89% of his laps. So let's get that out of the way right now. He's definitely a guy more prone to incidents than others. That is a fact. And he's definitely done that here at this race, finishing 35th and 22nd last year. But hear me out. At the end of both races, Jones was right there in second and third before getting into trouble. The final restart of this race last year, the spring race, he was second. He allowed for his teammate at the time, Martin Truex Jr., to shoot the gap from third and take the victory. And then he was the guy in third place during the fall race that caused that giant accident in the first place. He was right there in third, right behind his teammate. I know that he's no longer on Furniture Row, and apparently Furniture Row was cooking with some extra special sauce last year at this track. But remember that Jones, back in the Xfinity Series last year, the dude just dominated, like dominated at Kansas, leading almost every single lap and doing really well at the one race he did there with Kyle Busch, who obviously hogged all the lead laps there. He was right there the entire time. Very good history of success here at Kansas, even though that is not translated into the Cup Series with his crashes. If he keeps it together, starting 12th, he could be a good play. Again, FanDuel, where you want to play him. But you can have yourself a little Erik Jones on DraftKings. 8,100 is a pretty reasonable price for him. Then you've got Ryan Newman, 7,900, 8,400 on FanDuel. Starting 15th is a little high for him. He has some really good track history. Six straight top 12 finishes for him going into last year where he crashed in both races. If he just doesn't crash in this race, who's to say he doesn't have another top 12 finish in him? I just don't like the 200-1 odds I'm seeing. Of course, he's not going to win, but he could definitely finish like sixth. I could see that happening. I just don't like his 1.5-mile stats. You know, it's just not been good over the last few years. He's taken a step back in that regard. So I'd play Newman on FanDuel, but with some caution. Now we're going down to this little free space group over here. Four guys that did not take qualifying laps that are $7,100 or cheaper. And that would start off with the big play going into this week, Matt Kenseth taking over Trevor Bayne's number six Ford for a select number of races this year, including the next five. Now, Kenseth was really struggling in practice. You know, he's got lowered expectations going into this whole thing. He hasn't raced in half a year, and he definitely doesn't have the JGR equipment that all of his stats on the research station will show. You know, his average 45 lead laps at this track. You know, he's got domination in him for sure, outside of last year's fall race where he did crash, but he was right there before that big crash happened. The guy outside of that crash, all top 15 finishes here. Of course, that was all with JGR. Now he's in Trevor Bayne's number six Ford, which we know has been struggling a lot this year. He's there to give the team guidance, help them get the car in a better place. So he has to have lowered expectations, and he was going to be a great fade coming in, but nope, he's got to start 35th, which is just a free space. He's not gonna finish there at all. On DraftKings, it makes for a really nice play. On FanDuel at $9,600, that is a little pricey, and I wouldn't really be on him, even though he's starting so low and his track history is so good. I think it makes more sense to fade him on FanDuel and play him on DraftKings, where the place differential is just going to make him a lock and load play. Then you've got Kasey Kahne, $6,300. We've been riding him for a little bit. He's been doing this very nicely where he's not taking, or where he's not qualifying and starting in the back, and he's been doing pretty good. Last week we saw him fighting and just staying on that lead lap all the way through the very end there. Really nice performance from last week. I know it was on a different type of track, but with Kahne, just him hanging there is all we really need. Back in Hendricks, he would always finish top 15 here. But starting 34th, he only needs to finish like top 20, and he doesn't even need to do that really. If he finishes like 20th or 21st, he'll be fine. And that's all we're looking for from Kahne, and he could definitely do that. And $6,300 on DraftKings, $8,200 on FanDuel, you're going to need that savings for sure. If you having to spend for Harvick. Then you've got Michael McDowell starting 36th and Matt DiBenedetto starting 37th. McDowell's done this a few times and he has some good finishes from last year, finishing 18th and 13th. I'm kind of more excited about Matt DiBenedetto. He's been really good lately, like really consistently finishing in the top 30. He's just not the back half guy that he used to be. He's kind of graduating into that like Buescher, Allmendinger sort of territory. And starting second to last in this field, that is awesome. $5,200, $5,800 on FanDuel. You're going to be using a ton of him on FanDuel, I guarantee you, trying to get Harvick and Truex in there, and some Kyle Busch and Larson. So Matt DiBenedetto looks like a really solid play this week. Just tamper your expectations. Don't play like 70% or whatever. Definitely get some McDowell in there as well, as he can hang also. And should note that with McDowell, you don't want to go too far back in his stats. In the last four races here over the last 2 years, he's been doing pretty well. But of course, that was the Levine Family Racing, and before then, he was just in complete scrub material, finishing like 38th every race. Just ignore all of that. But he's in a little bit of a better spot for him this year in Castle's old number 34 Ford there. So, you know, McDowell, DiBenedetto, I know they both have 1,000 to 1 odds to win, but they're not going to win this thing. But they might finish top 25, and that's all you need at this price. Even like a top 27 would probably be all right, starting all the way back there. That would be like plus 10 place differential. It'll do you fine. And there's just not a lot of plays you can play back there because a lot of the $4,000 and $5,000 guys automatically get to start over the guys sent to the back, so it just screws them completely. The next range of plays we have here are the 7 and 6K value guys who are starting kind of far back but won't be like the obvious chalk like McDowell, DiBenedetto, and Kane, Kenseth. You're looking at Alex Bowman starting 19th, and he's been pretty solid lately. His odds stick out, 21-1 to win right now, compared to Byron at 200-1. That's kind of nuts, but no, Vegas is liking him. Either that or someone forgot to put an extra zero there when they were going for 200. One of the two. And he's been pretty solid. Got those cheese lead laps last week despite starting from the back. Bowman could definitely, you know, starting 19th, could definitely move up from there. Back in 2016, when he was filling in for Dale Jr., finished 7th in that car, and he's driving that car right now, so things could be looking up for Bowman there. McMurray gets start back in 24th, which is pretty nice. He's been really good at the 1.5-mile tracks, 86.9 driver rating, average running position of 11th, so starting 24th, I like the play right there for sure. Austin Dillon starting 25th. He screwed a lot of us last week, but he got in a lot of trouble with his car. This is his 1.5-mile car, and he's gotten a win at a 1.5-mile track already in Charlotte. 72.2 driver rating, 17.6 average running position. Just not as good of a play as McMurray, and slower practice times as well. But he could easily be up there in the winning lineup for sure. I just kind of like McMurray a little more. And then Stenhouse finally gets to qualify outside of the top 10. The 16th starting position, kind of a head-scratcher there, but you'd figure he's going to be moving up a little bit. He's been driving a lot better this year, although his numbers at the 1.5 miles tracks, similar to Dylan, 73.1 driver rating, 16.4 average running position, only averaging about four lead laps, or fast laps, only one lead lap. Probably just pit strategy or whatever. He's not going to win the race here like he could at a plate race, but $7,300, 16th, and moving up a little bit. Could definitely see him as a play on FanDuel, and even on DraftKings, I guess that's all right. You've got Suarez, who's been really good lately. Just an awesome finish last year. Debuted 7th at this track, and then got caught in a wreck in the fall race. So this could very well be a really good track for him. He did well in the Xfinity Series in one of the races. I think it was the race that Kyle Busch was in, leading all those laps. He finished like 2nd or 3rd in that race. 6th in practice ultimately, but back in race trim, he was 14th in speed overall. He's just still a little too cheap at $6,800. 9.5 on FanDuel is a much heftier price for him. He was in the optimal lineup last week. DraftKings still doesn't exactly believe that he belongs in the 7K range, and you should probably abuse that a little bit. Play more on DraftKings than FanDuel, although I'd imagine he'd be pretty low owned on FanDuel, so I guess I'd play him there too. And AJ Allmendinger starting 18th, he's a bit more of a fade there. I know he has a couple of top 10 finishes from 2016, but starting 18th, there's just so many better ways to go here. And then Ty Dillon starting 26th. He also has some pretty darn good finishes here, 16th and 14th last year. But he has been a lot worse this year, and 31st in practice overall. It's not great. Then you've got the list of do not plays. I'm going to go through them shortly here. Just don't play them. You can play them on FanDuel maybe, but at least DraftKings do not plays. Paul Menard starting 11th. He's super cheap over on FanDuel, so definitely play him over there. Then William Byron, $6,600 on DraftKings. It's very cheap for him, but starting 13th, not great. $8,600 over on FanDuel. He got the price bump like Suarez because he was in the optimal lineup as well. last week, was able to stay on the lead lap and do pretty well. He had a really nice practice, was 10th overall in speed before they went to race trim, in which he ended up ultimately 14th, which was nice to see. And he ended up being one of the better Chevys in practice overall. But his first time here at this track, wasn't exactly too dominant in the Xfinity series, but you know, I could see playing him on FanDuel. I don't really see the play coming through on DraftKings, although he did start 11th previously in the season and ended up in the winning lineup on DraftKings, so who knows? Don't X him out completely. Chris Buescher starting 10th. He was awesome in practice, ultimately ended up 8th before they went into qualifying trim. He was only 21st overall in the speed there, but he was able to make some adjustments to his car that he liked. And last year in this fall race, he was one of those survivors, ended up finishing 6th and then 18th in the spring race. Hasn't finished worse than 25th in four races here. He's just starting way too high in 10th, maybe on FanDuel, but man, definitely not on DraftKings. Don't touch him there. And you've got David Ragan, who qualified too high. He also had some good finishes last year, 17th in both races, but starting 20th, too high for DraftKings. I guess FanDuel, maybe, just play him a little, but I still am not huge on Ragan this week. He's just not great at the 1.5-mile tracks compared to everywhere else. And then Corey LaJoie will start off just this huge range of ugliness. These are the guys that qualified and should be dead last, but you know, there are those guys that didn't qualify at all and they get to jump over them. Like LaJoie starting 27th, the worst play you could possibly make. Have him projected for -7 right now. Ross Chastain starting 28th, Sorensen 30th, Castle in 31st, and Gray Galding in 29th. Just no thank you to any of these guys. If you know, gun to my head, I might take Castle starting 31st. He's finished there or better in the last four races here, but he's in Jeffrey Earnhardt's double zero Chevy. Just no. And then if you feel really dicey, if you like to blend up nails in the blender and eat them for breakfast, if you're that kind of dude, you should take a shot at Timmy Hill, $4,600 in DraftKings. Not even available on FanDuel. He's no money because they don't even have him in the player pool. Starting dead last, 38th overall. We've seen it before. He finished 28th here in the spring race last year. All he needs to do is just survive past the guys who just blow their engines or whatever. That's all that needs to happen. You know, like Paul Menard last year in this race, or Joey Logano last year in this race, Almirola, Newman. These guys just took an early exit, allowing Timmy Hill to just gain free spaces. If we have any sort of crash like Jones caused last year, the huge pileup, who knows? But he's the only one of these super scrubs, the only one that you should touch just for the pure sake that he's starting in last place. But he is definitely the worst car in the field, don't get it wrong. Galding might be a close second, but he's the worst. So that'll do it for Taco's Not So Fast 40. Kept it under an hour, so that's good. Hopefully you guys got a really good breakdown. Hopefully I have half the success that we had last week. Last week was just awesome. We need to have another week like that. We need to clutter the GPP leaderboards with helmets once again. And you can come get yours at dfsarmy.com. Use promo code TACO on sign up to support the pod. You love this pod. It's very informative. It's nice. If you're listening on YouTube, haven't come check this out, you gotta check out the research station just to see what all is going on. It's just excellent content. If you really want a good breakdown on how your drivers fared here year to year, I just recommend going to this historical performances tab and either filtering by their name or just sorting by name and looking through the guys. You can get a really good view of how they've done recently, what their best finishes have looked like. And of course, the positional scoring summary is just absolutely key week to week. And you can see stats like the laps finish stats for FanDuel, which are just essential when trying to figure out who's going to finish the most laps. So that'll do it for us here. The Taco's Fast 40, dfsarmy.com. Come check us out. And not exactly sure if there'll be a pod next week. There's the All-Star Race, but we all know the All-Star Race sucks. And it's a load of bullcrap because it's just all pure variance. But we'll definitely have one ready for the most boring race of the year, the Coca-Cola 600, where we get to watch someone lead 300 laps. We'll definitely have content out for that, all the goodness, and we'll probably see you guys then. Have a good one this week, and remember to put all them helmets at the top of the lineups again. Helps us out tremendously. Let's just bulldoze right through these contests, both FanDuel and DraftKings. Gotta dominate them all. Alright, it's been real, and I'll see you guys either next week or the week after. Later.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game. Yeah.